for this this evening, but we have another guest. Of course, as events often transpire that are, if you want to call it, beyond the range of coincidence. I spent the last hour and a half speaking for the first time to John DiNardo, who has his own radio show on shortwave, and talks as a scientist about some very important events that are happening or about to happen to our solar system. Some that people think, of course, are still very controversial, but if you look at the geological record and the record of ancient civilizations, events have happened that are not explained by the current science of volcanism and other things on our planet. To the program, John, can you give us a little bit of a background on yourself, which you mentioned earlier this evening to me off air, and perhaps a little bit of the reason why you have your show?
Thank you for inviting me, Dr. Deagle. Briefly, I was a high school physics teacher. I have an interest in science, naturally, and also, after getting out of teaching early in my career, I went back into electronics, circuit design, and electrical engineering, working for Bell Laboratories, where I worked until the year 2000 and retired from that time. Retired at that time. I have been studying the New World Order from around the first Gulf War, and realized the ramifications of it were world government. The ramifications of the Persian Gulf War were leading to world government, and gradually I started to learn more and more about it. And one day I heard about Planet X, and it just, something spiritually told me that it was correct, even though I had no knowledge of it at all. It just, you know, sometimes you get a spiritual insight, and I believe it's from God. And he was guiding me, telling me that this is correct, and I threw all my effort into it. I became very interested and enthusiastic in the subject, and did quite a bit of studying in it, and my former science background helped me to understand the principles that were involved, and most of which were given to me by Professor James McCanney, formerly of Cornell University.
And right. Also, and of course, Dr. McCanney is a very, very top-level astrophysicist.
Yes, right, and he has a way of bringing things to an understandable level,
right?
With my knowledge of electronics and electricity and magnetism, it made so much sense, the principles of the electrical solar system, which he was describing, and how they're now affecting us, particularly with Planet X entering our solar system and causing this electrical discharge between the plasma. That tremendous amount of plasma that has built up at the outer periphery of our solar system as a result of the sun, which is actually, the sun is at the center of the solar system,
right.
And it blows out waves of solar winds, which are called solar winds, in all directions in three-dimensional space, sort of like a pebble, when you would throw a pebble into a calm lake and watch the ripples radiating outward in all directions. The only difference is if the sun blows them out in three-dimensional space, not just the two-dimensional surface of water, as in a pond.
And right. Now, there's a couple of different events just to get people kind of thinking about these things, because the purpose of the BBS radio network is to expand people's consciousness and to realize that the separation between science and spirit really is just our level of ignorance. That to the creator of the universe and to a true scientist who's also spiritual, we have to recognize our own level of stupidity, ignorance, and lack of knowledge. And when we can't create an artificial reality and then worship it and think it's real. We have to then go back and make observations through history, through geology, through chemistry. And when we see something that's a paradox, it's really the answer to a question we haven't asked yet. And a couple of things that I'll just mention as facts and see how you can respond to them. One of the first things, and I deal with it on my report called the Nutramedical Report on Genesis Radio, is we have an interesting phenomenon that the solar activity in the next 30 to 50% higher in the next 11-year solar cycle, and that it's already been increasing dramatically in the last, say, 5-6 years. In fact, we had the largest solar ejection occur in modern history occur just, I think it was last fall. And that solar ejection, luckily, it missed the Earth. If it had hit the Earth, we would have had some pretty serious blackouts. possibly a lot of other things happen, like radiation injuries and other things that people don't know about. These kind of events tell us that our solar system is very electrical and that discharges, like a giant spark, if you want to call it, occur, or plasma ejections occur from the sun, that we're protected by a thing called a Van Allen belt, which is an ion belt around the Earth, and that that Van Allen belt is actually deteriorating because of above-ground nuclear testing and depleted uranium particles. In fact, that science, I've had Dr. Lorraine Murray, and she's had Dr. Sternglass, who actually was involved with the SALT treaties, trying to convince President Kennedy when they first did this back many years ago. They just came back from Japan after trying to convince the Japanese about the dangers of the nuclear reactors and the depleted uranium issues that may result from an Iranian war that they're planning on launching in the next, say, months or year or two. And so we're seeing some events that don't make sense. For example, all eight planets are heating up. So if people say, well, it's just due to greenhouse gases and so on, that's not true. In fact, Mount Erebus in Antarctica, it spews as much pollution and as much, if you want to call it, greenhouse gases as 100,000 of the largest coal-fired power plants on the planet. So the effect of cyclical activity plus solar activity is far more important in terms of global warming and other events. Like, for example, if you look at volcanism and earthquakes, the numbers of earthquakes have been progressively increasing for the last 50 years. Now that they're actually increasing at a tremendous rate. In fact, I'm going to have Stan Deo, who's a scientist who worked for NASA and worked with Edward Teller on the anti-gravitational aircraft down in Central Australia with Ed Teller back in the 70s. And he's also has his wife, Holly Deo, writes Prudent Places USA, the book, and there are several editions, and they also have their DVD CDs to explain all the places for physical danger, like calderas, volcanic activity, natural disasters, places that are near fault lines, and so on, which I think is important for people to know because we live in a violent Earth. If you see the NOVA specials and PBS, you realize that the Earth has not been a very, very quiet place. There's been major earthquakes, there's been tsunamis, there's been major storms. We've experienced some in the last year or so. But the increase in the severity of these storms, the increase in volcanic activity, and the number of dead around the world has dramatically been increasing just even within the last few years. And we have to explain this in terms of solar and galactic science rather than on conjecture. Some of the terms that have been used in the past is Planet X. And, of course, as soon as people hear that, they immediately dismiss it and think, well, that's non-science. And it's nonsense. I guess that's a good way to put it.
Excuse me. Planet X was a term that was created by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
Right, and I agree with that term.
A document put out by NASA called, titled, The Search for Planet X.
And I like that term, but the reason why I don't like the word planet, and I'm going to explain this so that the audience listening can kind of understand, that's an intro back to you to deal with the hard science of this, is that there's a number of paradoxes and actual scientific facts that can't be explained. Now, we call it a planet, but in technical terms, if we look at the galaxy, roughly of the star systems that have, you know, planetary bodies around them that are in our solar system, it's been estimated now with the Hubble telescope and other systems that 74% of the planetary systems have what's called binary stars. And if you look at the broader definition of what a star is, it can be a brown dwarf, which doesn't generate solar light. It can be a planetoid like Jupiter that actually gives off more radiation than it receives. So it's probably got high enough gravity that actually is generating nuclear reactions, so it actually radiates more thermal and non-thermal energy. And so in a sense, if you take the scientific definition, Jupiter is actually not a planet, it's actually a star. And of course our sun is a yellow dwarf, which is a, you know, and there's bigger and bigger classes of stars right up to the blue giant, like Betelgeuse, which is a blue giant star that's many hundreds of thousands of times bigger than our sun. The if you look at the historical record, this object, which is called by NASA Planet X, would actually make more sense to call it the trinary star of our solar system, that there's actually a third star. And this third star is probably a brown dwarf, super high-dense gravity object that moves through our solar system periodically in a very elliptical orbit that would carry a whole cadre of comets and asteroids with it, and would explain why perhaps there's been very significant evidence that between for the large asteroid belt, the Kuiper belt that actually inhabits our solar system, are the remains of a previous planet that was ripped apart by this object. And it would make more sense that something that periodically passes through would explain phenomena that we know from ancient records, like the Bible, for example, that talks about the time during the Battle of Joshua where literally the sun stood still in the sky. There's records from the ancient Egyptian records that go back many thousands of years. This has happened before, that there's solar events. And it's interesting we're talking about this on this day, because this is the day when the solar eclipse passed from Brazil all the way through to Mongolia. So how do you respond to that in terms of trying to get people to start thinking about this rather than just shutting down intellectually or mentally or spiritually on this issue? How do you respond?
Well, I can understand that people would tend to shut their minds to such a subject, because something that's extremely fearful tends to cause people to run away. But there is a lot of hope. I want people to know that they should first realize that God is in control of everything. And if most people do have a knowledge of God, a knowledge of the Creator, to know that this is, God will protect those who have continue in faith with Him, and that this is part of His plan. So it's nothing to be, it's something to be afraid of. But to know that God is in control can help us to understand that we can be protected, and that we should open our minds to the subject. I think the spiritual is very important.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why I always deal with this as well as the scientific. For example, if you actually look at volcanism, which is volcanic activity on Earth, you cannot explain several phenomena. First thing, you can't explain any mountains. Mountains can't be explained unless you have a hypergravitational superdense object that moves through our solar system, probably periodically, because if you look at the actual age of our mountains, it suggests at regular intervals that a very, very hyperdense object has to move through the solar system to cause the tectonic plates to pile up over days, weeks, and months to actually create the mountains, because you need something that changes the gravitational effects so dramatically that it'll actually pile up the crust of the Earth to form mountains. It's not just the collision of continents that forms these. A collision wouldn't create the Andes Mountains, or wouldn't create the Rocky Mountains, or the Caucasus Mountains, or the mountains in Nepal. Those things are not going to occur just from the collision of continents. Those have to occur with very dramatic events where the crust of the Earth gets piled up on itself because of major geotectonic events that go beyond volcanism. Does that make sense in terms
yes.
of...
Yes.
Yeah. And so yes, if you think of that, you say either
of
passes,
the planet.
Pardon
think
me?
Of the Earth as, think of the Earth as comparable or as analogous to a raw egg.
Right.
And you take a piece of tape and attach it, stick it to the raw egg, and pull on that thin, fragile shell.
Right.
You'd cause the egg shell to lift upward and crack. Well, that's similar to it. It's the gravitational pull that a passing planet would have on planet Earth. It's action at a distance.
Right. And of course, part of that is what we're seeing in terms of actual things in the Earth is we're seeing an increase in activity of the El Nino. And if you actually study what the El Nino is, it has nothing to do with the El Nino down in South America has nothing to do with global warming. It has actually due to under-ocean volcanism. There's a huge volcanic venting area that's islands that actually...
Hello.
Hello, yes.
I guess not.
I'm here. This is Dr. Deagle. You're still on air?
I'm here, Dr. Deagle.
I'm just hearing some bleeps in the background there. So there's a huge amount of venting that occurs. Now, when that ocean heats up on the bottom, which is ordinarily very cold, the ocean literally turns over on itself. It rotates. So the warmer water below lifts up and rotates the cold waters in the surface so that it actually creates these huge air currents and so on that alters weather. And, of course, it changes the movement of the jet stream. It creates the changes in the weather, world weather climate patterns. When we're seeing increases in, for example, the bulging of the caldera, which is this huge magma dome in Montana that they can see in Yellowstone National Park, when we're seeing increased earthquakes all over the world, then we know that there's something that's much bigger than just Earth itself that's affecting our planet. Now, some of these things are probably very ancient, and this knowledge may actually go back a very long time. So if you look at writings by people like Velikovsky and Sitchin, what you see is that there are imprints of Marduk, of the destroyer, of all these terms going back that are deeply embedded into ancient religions. I don't think, as I say, through the sands of time, that we can just dismiss mythology when it expresses something that explains solar activity in ways that are limited science currently explains to us. So tell us a little bit more about how you came to think that there may be, quote, a real Planet X or a real, we call a dwarf star that may actually be rotating every 3,600 years around the solar system in a very hyper-elliptical orbit, how it could be causing some of the changes in solar activity, and it could be causing the changes in volcanism and earthquakes on Earth.
Well, it's primarily from Professor McCanny's teachings. He explains how this planet is, as you mentioned, our solar system, like three out of four solar systems in the galaxy, is a binary solar system. It has two stars. Now, you can draw a very visual analogy thinking of a clothesline. Did you ever remember the old-fashioned clothesline?
Just one second, John. Yes, Don, yes. Do you have a caller? Don, do you have someone calling in? No, go ahead, John.
Yes, there is a caller online with you.
John, do you want to take a question first before we proceed? Because we have lots of time here.
Caller?
Go ahead, caller, and tell us your name and then your question.
I can't hear him. We have a very bad connection. I'll call back.
Stay there, caller.
Okay.
Now,
yeah,
we're going to get this figured out.
Stan Shulman, right? I could tell from your accent.
All right, everybody. We're going to have to try this a different way. Now, bear with me. We're going to do a little test here because I re-switched everything to see if this would work. Bill, can you hear Bill okay?
No.
Yeah, hi, Stan, can you hear me?
You can't hear the caller okay.
Yeah, I can hear
you. I cannot hear Dr. Bill, no.
You cannot hear Dr. Bill. All right, stay with me.
Hear you.
Okay, Dr. Bill?
Yes.
Can you hear him now?
Stan, can you talk?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear him now?
I can hear you now.
Wonderful, okay. Stan, can you tell us a little bit about, this is a little break from our discussion, because I know why Stan's calling in. Stan, can you tell us about the amazing discovery that you've made about electrolyzed plus water and how, when you went to Asia, then you managed to transform this from, quote, a miracle water that wasn't successful to one that was able to do remarkable things at helping people heal and detoxify and hydrate their bodies?
Well, what we've done is, Dr. Bill, we figured a way to stabilize and enhance the water. Our water is so powerful that the energy level cannot be measured by the equipment that exists today. It goes right off the scale.
Right. Now, when you went to Asia, you went many years ago. You went as an investment banker, and they kept on showing you this, quote, miracle water, and you brought it back and were able to heal. I believe it was your horse. Is that right?
We healed a horse that the veterinarian said would never be healed. It would be scarred.
I'm sorry to break in, but can everybody hear each other?
I can hear Stan, but just enough barely that I can make out everything he's saying.
And the caller can hear you both?
Yeah, but his vibration
is on the line.
Faintly.
Yeah. I can hear Stan faintly too, yeah.
Okay.
All right, continue, Stan. So tell us about, So obviously, this water is very remarkable. And what it did was, obviously, was do something that was living water. It was water that would allow the transmission of bioimpulses, we call biophotons. It would allow alkalinization of the body to remove toxins and bring in nutrients and water into the cells. Give us some testimonials of how remarkable this is compared to, you know, when people say, well, water, it's just water. It can be like any other water. Why is this so remarkable?
Well, let me tell you about that. Athletes find that when they go in for hydration tests, that their body runs from 40 to 60% hydrated, and after they drink the water, they're over 80%.
Right. So we're talking about intracellular, inside the cells, not between the cells.
Inside the cells.
Right, and of course, the best test for that is called a bioimpedance. It's actually a physical electrical test. It's like measuring the charge on your battery. It's measuring the potential difference, electromotive potential difference across all your cell membranes.
That's right.
I have a machine that actually does this, and when you put it on your right hand, say in your foot, you can actually measure the electromotive potential across the body. And if it's in a high range, it means there's like a lot of charge on your battery. And it means also the hydration level is higher. When it's low, it means the intracellular water level is very low.
Right.
So
That is the very first thing it will do is hydrate you. The second thing, it's like having a detoxification product that cleans and detoxifies every area of the body within 36 hours, including the blood vessels in the vascular system.
Right.
We've had people going in for double, triple, and quadruple bypasses that were told to go home because they didn't need it after they drank the water. And live blood analysis shows that the clumps of platelets start to break up and disappear within 25 minutes of drinking the water.
Right. And of course, what it is a structured water. And, we've talked about this many times, Stan, that what's happening is the ancients, like the Romans and all the other peoples, like in South America, treated water with great respect because water was brought in by conduits and so on. It wasn't brought on these dead, metallic or plastic pipes. It wasn't, loaded up with chlorine and chemicals and other things. And so it literally was able to transmit what you call life force, which what we discovered now is that every molecule, biomolecule in a living thing transmits an infrared signal to the DNA, which is like a crystal. The DNA responds by changing its conformation and controlling genes. And that if you have dead water and you have dehydrated cells, it's the basis for disease. In other words, cancer, autoimmune diseases, allergy, everything grows in an acid and a dehydrated environment.
So you talk about cancer. We have proven that the level of antioxidants in your body increases by 50% within an hour of drinking water.
Right. And now you can obtain this at my website, NutriMedical, NutriMedical.com, which is NutriMedical.com, or you can call me from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, 888-212-8871, because people need to do, the first thing they need to do is alkalinize their body and hydrate their cells. And then they need to detoxify, and we'll have some other programs dealing with some of the amazing things for detoxifying, because we live in a very poisoned planet. We live in a very toxic world. We have dead water that we drink that's loaded with hundreds and thousands, literally hundreds of very high level and thousands of lower level cancer-inducing and disease-inducing agents. We have our food laced with genetically modified, monster genes that generate amino acids and other chemicals that are totally foreign to all living things. We have aspartame, MSG, sucralose. And if you want to preserve your health and your mind and your ability to even be, to spiritually advance yourself and physically take care of your health, you have to cleanse your body. And we live in a very poisoned world, and you have to take personal responsibility whether you're coming back from the Gulf and you've got depleted uranium, whether you've just had a bypass operation, whether you have an inflammatory condition like inflammatory bowel disease or arthritis or autism. All of these things will respond if you will give the proper soil in which the body can start to heal itself. And the primary thing that you need to do is to alkalinize your body with an alkaline diet and you need the electrolyzed plus water. Now, of course, you also have the acid water that's the most amazing anti-infective that I've ever heard that is totally safe because it's water, but it's a very special structured water with a log kill many times higher than anything I've ever heard before.
Well, the log kill that we do is double the amount required by the EPA as a disinfectant.
Right, and of course they use your machines in hospitals in Japan, in restaurants and so on around the world, and these machines are able to generate these types of cleansing things that basically have no toxic effects on the environment. And the problem is we are destroying our world. We're soiling our cage. We're destroying the planet, and we're also destroying our genetics, because as we put out things like depleted uranium, as we put out phosphates and pollutants, as we put all these soaps and everything else in the world, we also have a very filthy planet. When we look at the spread of infectious diseases and viruses, it's simply a matter of hygiene. If we have proper hygiene in the public places, non-toxic things that could kill all of these organisms, they wouldn't spread.
So, Dr. Bill, you mentioned water before, drinking water. The government of the United States allows 97 different carcinogens in your drinking water.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah,
it's
just amazing.
Amazing thing.
Well, it's not acceptable, and the fact is we're trying to bring the truth to the people on this program, on the PBS Radio Network, and on my show, the Nutramedical Report on Genesis. That's GCNLive.com, because they want to suppress the truth. They don't want to have doctors, scientists, toxicologists, people like yourself that are a business person that became an expert on this, brought this wonderful business, used American know-how to take something that wasn't stable and make it truly a miracle water. And it's not made up. It's not the hype. It really does have this effect. You can take professional athletes. You can do bioimpedance on them. You can see their actual physical performance. It improves, and you can take someone who's very sick, very, very acid, and in a very, very deteriorating state, and you change the soil in which their disease is growing so that you can have whatever else you do, you have to alkalinize and hydrate.
That's
so
right.
Thanks, Stan, for calling in.
Thank you.
Bring
you
back
me.
To our guest, and we'll definitely have you back, Stan, to remind the people of basic health. If you don't take care of the temple, your body, you cannot take care and do of your family, you can't take of what you take care of your wealth, and you certainly can't take care of yourself spiritually or any other way.
Thanks
for calling in.
It's a pleasure being here. Bye-bye.
Take care, Stan, and we'll be talking soon.
Yes, bye.
Back to John. John, can you give us some more information about the kinds of journey you've had on your program over the last period of time, and what kinds of objections you hear from people in terms of them saying that they can't believe that a solar body could have major effects on the geotectonics of the Earth, weather systems, and other things?
Well, oddly enough, Dr. Deagle, I don't get much, I don't get many disbelievers after they've listened to my radio broadcast, because the evidence is laid out clearly and in detail and gradually so that they can digest it. And I think it becomes almost intuitively accepted when I explain to them, or I have speakers. Actually, most of the broadcast is done by other speakers, and it's all recorded with musical background to
dramatize. Oh, yes. Okay, that's great.
And it really brings people emotionally into the context of what the speakers are saying.
Right, and of course, people have to understand you're also intuitive as well as a scientist, and yours is very, very solidly based, like Dr. McCannell, on science and on the fact that when you have a paradox like mountains, which is a very, very easy paradox to look at, you know that you have to explain it with other events that obviously there's something going on there. What's your website and your radio show and the call letters and time so people that want to go log onto your site or listen to your program on shortwave, how do they do that?
Okay, I don't have a website, but it's broadcast one on shortwave, and that's every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's on WWRB. That's not too important. Actually, what's important to know is the frequency. The frequencies are 3185, 3185.
That's 3185.
And 5050, 5050.
So 3185 and 5050 shortwave, and that is at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Right, and to broadcast simultaneously at 10 p.m., right?
Yep.
And also at, on Fridays on the Internet, which is also picked up off the Internet and broadcast on satellite by through the satellite and pulled down from satellite by various stations. Now,
right.
This Internet satellite broadcast occurs on Friday, every Friday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time at theamericanvoice.com.
So The American Voice. Now, do they archive the programs too?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, it's important to archive these because I tell people that the whole scientific method, which is basically down through history, all the scientists were also high priests and spiritual people through every civilization. And the first thing is they knew that there was something intuitively they knew, and then what they do is they'd formulate a hypothesis. They go back out and study and pray and use their intuition as well as the scientific method to observe. They'd form a hypothesis, and then they continue to refine it until the cloudiness of the truth would become clearer and clearer to the point where it would become solidly based theory. And, of course, that's what we're dealing with, is something that explains a lot of phenomena, if you want to call it a theory, that otherwise you can't explain, such as some of the events through ancient history and recurring events that are cyclical that happen through many, many thousands of years and, major events that have happened on the Earth.
Yes, and, one of the most important things you said, and listeners should keep in mind, that God guides us in our understanding and our knowledge. Our wisdom is all God-created, God-guided. And, this is coming from a person, myself, one who was a belligerent atheist for most of my life. And God worked in my life about 15 years ago, to bring me to faith, and it was just a miraculous transformation that occurred in me. And so I can tell you, I'm not speaking as someone who who is strictly metaphysical. I'm speaking through as someone who was a scientific skeptic, a scientist and a skeptic. And now I realize that God's knowledge, and it's all verifiable now when we see the evidence in the Bible that God created these, God actually created or ordained these events to occur at past times in our history. You see, this passage of this planet, this huge brown dwarf star, which NASA has titled Planet X, is a repetitive cyclical event. And it comes by every time God feels that that our world needs a spanking, to put it in colorful terms. Every time we need a spanking or we need to come to faith, to be like a father who sees his kids running wild, well, God is seeing his children on earth running wild, running amok to the point where we're destroying ourselves. We're about to destroy ourselves. What does a father do? A good father would take off the belt and start whacking those kids into submission before they kill themselves.
Happening. As it is. What we have is we have what I call a convergence or the nexus. And let's say there was no event coming, there's no weather systems coming or anything. We have right now the advancement of science that's near what's called the singularity. That's the vertical rise of science to the level where we don't just leap centuries, we leap thousands or even hundreds of thousands of years. We also have to deal with the fact that we're dealing with a very large galaxy that has hundreds of billions of stars and hundreds of billions of galaxies, so that the probability, if you even just take some of the astrophysicists, that in those billions of stars there are other advanced civilizations, it's very probable that we are just at the edge, if you want to call it, of starting to explore space, like a baby about to take its first step. And there's many that have been out there for thousands, millions, or even billions of years. And what I happen to know this from my contacts in the classified work that I've done, that in fact we've had contacts with those civilizations. Some of them are good and some of them are very malevolent. If you take the ancient books of the Bible, or you look at other books from other, quote, ancient traditions like the Vedas, the Upanishad, the Epic of Gilgamesh, if you look at all these ancient books, what you start to discover is that there's commonalities there, even if they've been passed and twisted through mythology. And then you understand the clearest copied documents which come into modern history, jot and tittle correctly, is the Torah of ancient that was given by Moses. And what you understand then is that a lot of the events that are in our current science are explained by things that we think are spiritual, but they aren't. Such as the day during the Battle of Joshua, when with the Amorites, where the sun stood still in the sky, and there was a day that I think was 36 hours. And a lot of people will dismiss it and say, no, that can't be. It couldn't have occurred. That doesn't happen. Or the flood of Noah. They'll say, well, there's no possible way that that could have occurred the way it was listed that this flood of Noah had occurred.
Right, but scientists have actually done time studies and found that there was time lost somewhere back in history, and
right.
The time exactly equates to the time that was added to, or the days that were lost in the Joshua's longest day.
Right.
So, you know, this is a science.
But it all fits
exactly.
It's a
case of modern science confirming what the Bible says.
Right, and you see this hundreds and thousands of times, but then you go back and you actually see it explain events so that things start to come together. You realize it's no longer a hypothesis. It's now a theory that explains disparate events that don't seem to make sense and makes a sense of them.
Right, like the flood of Noah, for example. Now, Professor McCanny tells us that from his studies of the great Emanuel Velikovsky, who passed away in the mid-20th century.
Right.
Velikovsky wrote several books, one of which was Worlds in Collision.
Right.
He is now being recognized as a great genius who introduced the theory, which is no longer a theory, it's proof of catastrophism, catastrophic changes of the earth, contrary to the common false teaching of slow evolutionary change.
Right.
Ice age is gradually occurring. Well, Velikovsky put that all to rest. And one of the things that Professor McCanny has gotten from Velikovsky was that the flood, great flood of Noah, was probably the result of actually a close flyby of Mars, where Mars had once had a water atmosphere, and because of the close proximity of Earth to Mars, there was a tug of war, so to speak, of atmospheres, and Earth won out and pulled in all the water atmosphere from Mars, and this is what created the Great Flood, because the Bible tells us prior to that flood, there was never rain on Earth. It was just a mist, a very heavy mist, but there was never any rainfall, which has led, you know, most everyone else around him, Noah, to believe that it was impossible to have a flood. So there you have a case of science confirming science proving or showing a way to confirm the events of the Bible.
Right, and the fact is that we know that, for example, every day there's equivalent to three large buildings of comets that actually strike the Earth and bring water. So a lot of the water is brought from, literally comets are bringing all the water to the oceans. But major events like this would explain things like the waters of the deep and the waters from above were brought down literally like a shower, if you want to call it. This wasn't just rain. This was a literal shower, oceans of shower of water that covered huge areas of the so-called continents at the time when this flood occurred. And, of course, here we have someone, we have Noah, who if you look back through the flood traditions, back through ancient books, and not only the Bible but other books, you see that there's events that happen that don't make sense. Or you've talked to the native peoples, such as the native peoples of places like Alaska or the west coast of North America, you find that they've had periodic, or South America, you see these huge stories about giant mega tsunamis, waves that were literally like half a mile high, major changes in the sky where literally the cold came down and froze. We have these actual in museums, woolly mammoths frozen in a 20th of a second at 160 degrees below zero when the upper troposphere drops. Those kind of events can't be explained by normal storms or gradual ice ages. They have to be explained by something that changes the whole atmosphere, that changes the whole geotectonics, that is able to change literally the crust of the Earth and actually rotate, if you want to call it, the oceans on the so that they pile up against the continents, which travel at differential speeds.
Yes, I mean, what you mentioned, the woolly mammoths, the ancient woolly mammoths, there is so much hard evidence of mammoths that had been dug up out of the deep ice. They were originally they were in a tropical climate, and in
right.
an instant, as Dr. Deagle says, they froze.
They opened up their
mouths and found tropical vegetation in the mouths of these woolly mammoths. They were frozen while
right.
they were standing.
I did marine bacteriology back in the 70s, and we had a ship that went from this Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and the Bedford Institute in Halifax, Nova Scotia. They're kind of sister organizations. And they go every year in a ship called the Jasper up to these islands, you know. And these islands are big. They're the size of continents. People don't realize just how big the North is. And you can go up there and you can actually see trees with circumferences of 5, 8, 10 feet across. And woolly mammoths and bones down there that are actually right in the permafrost that were frozen solid instantaneously. And these are woolly mammoths that are literally 1,000 miles north of what you think they're even forests.
Mm-hmm. The vegetation was from a tropical climate. That's the vegetation
right.
that scientists found in their mouths and in their stomachs after they were dug out of deep ice.
Right. Yeah. And the only way to explain these kinds of things is this. Almost in a sense, even more dramatic than the movie, The Day After Tomorrow, where they talked about these convergent storms that formed a superstorm cell that got together, what we have to realize, and I hear people say this when I talk about it on my show, the Nutramedical Report, they think it's, due to greenhouse gases, and we've got to sign the Kyoto Accord. And yes, we don't need to pollute our planet. We need to reduce pollution because the industries and the transnational corporations suppress free energy like the Pierce Arrow car that Tesla developed or 150-mile-per-gallon vehicles and so on, and zero pollution, which we need to do. But the real issue is that the greenhouse gases are not causing most of what we're seeing now. We're seeing increased volcanism. We're seeing increased solar activity. All of the planets are heating up. If you actually read about this and check it out yourself, that's why I always tell people, check it out, own the truth, question what you even think you know. Whether you're in your specific religious or scientific or your inquiry, keep your mind open to analyze, to pray, to spiritually become intuitive to what's going on. Because if you put all the pieces together, and all the stuff that I know is just both classified in science, what you come together is that the global leaders are hiding something that they know that's happening or going to happen soon to the planet. And this is not just the avian flu or a nuclear war or some other event. They're hiding information that they know is going to change the face of civilization. And if you look at, as they say, the old story is, if you go where the money is, you find out what the really big event that's happening with all the hidden money in the world is building deep underground military bases and cities. And number two, off-world classified research that I happen to know about, that we have a base on the moon that's a mining operation and a city up there, and we also have a colony on Mars now. So why would they do this? Well, they're doing this because they're having a plan, just like the Russians built two large cities in the last 15 years, each able to hold 250,000 people in each city in the Caucasus Mountains. And these are massive cities. Why would you spend literally trillions of dollars on this? Not for protection against nuclear war, but for something much more cataclysmic. If you didn't realize that there was some science that indicated you knew something that you didn't want to share with the rest of the population of Earth. Does that make
yes.
any sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. And I would like to emphasize to all the listeners that this subject goes far beyond, interest, fascination or science fiction type of interest.
Right.
It goes to our very survival, your survival and mine. These events are about to occur very soon. So even if you say, well, I'm not going to believe what these men are saying about the imminent catastrophes that are about to occur, even if you don't accept them immediately, and you should not accept them immediately until you do your own research, you must take this so seriously that if what we're telling you is that these events are going to happen very quickly, for example,
right.
the New Madrid Fault Zone.
Earthquakes occurring down there now in the New Madrid Fault. I talked to Stan Deo, who's going to be on my radio show, who's an expert on volcanology, has his website, standeo.com. He has these satellite photos that show earthquake activities increasing everywhere, not just in one spot. So we can't just say, well, George Bush did it and the U.S. military. No,
that's
no, no.
Right. That's this what they're trying to tell us, that it was government manipulated.
No, no, no.
That's true, but there's a minor influence.
Minor influence. They may be able to actually make an event trigger that's going to happen by playing with it with their scalar weapons.
Tesla weapons, right.
Yeah, with the Tesla scalar weapons. But what's really going on is far beyond that. And here's what I think. This is my thesis before we close off today's program and have you back. My thesis is that they know that these events are coming at some point in the future, whether it's 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 100. They're preparing. That's why they've released things like the avian flu that's weaponized to kill a good part of the human population. That's why they're progressing with what seems to be insane proliferation of nuclear weapons. That's why they're building cities like crazy. And all these cities, by the way, are funded by the illegal sale of drugs. So why were they desperate to get Afghanistan? It had nothing to do with the Twin Towers. In fact, I did the ex-exam and munitions forensic team, so I know Oklahoma City was put on by the government. I know the Twin Towers were. They already had the American and British forces literally stationed for months beforehand on the other side of the border to cross into Afghanistan before any of these events happened. They were all getting ready. And the reason is they had to get the drug crops. They have a base in that the British just sent over just a month ago in Afghanistan to make sure that the poppy crop gets over to get the heroin and so on for billions and billions of dollars of black op projects that's not accounted for by the regular governments and the, quote, elected officials, that's responsive to the globalists who are controlling this or building these underground cities and facilities and doing all these strange projects. Why would they be so desperate? The reason is that they are preparing for a cataclysm of civilization.
Right. Before I spoke to you for the first time today, Dr. Deagle, this was, you know, spiritually God gives us insights when we pray to him, keep him in our thoughts, try
right.
to stay connected to God throughout the day. This is the very same insight that I got, even though I had not been, my opinion had not been influenced by yours because I hadn't met you before this. But for months I sensed that the reason, the very same reason that you're giving, why these people in power, the globalists, are racing at a feverish pace to bring about a brutal, iron-fisted dictatorship. They're doing so many fronts, the educational
right.
front, the monetary
global
front,
currency,
the,
global the, control. They actually have chips ready to stick a chip in every person on Earth. This is not theory. This is not the conjecture of a psychotic doctor. I can give you the technical details and locations. So when you put it all together, you say, this doesn't make sense. Even if you were just greedy and wanted power, you wouldn't do this.
Right. But your connection with the oncoming imminent geological catastrophes makes it all understandable, doesn't it?
Right. And I have Stan going to be on my program next week talking about some of these specific things, because when you look at the events, and he actually takes U.S. naval satellite photos, looks at the piezoelectric heating of the oceans, and when you see the heating on either side of fault lines, you can actually predictively know when a geotectonic event is going to occur. And of course, if you're talking about a 30 to 50% increase in solar activity. That's phenomenal. We're talking about...
And this has been announced in the mass media.
This is announced in the mass media.
Increase.
So people say, well, what's that? Well, here's what I think, because I have training, and I was supposed to go into nuclear physics, had a special aptitude test, and my IQ is over 200. The reason for it is when you have a large mass object that moves through the solar system, you get solar mass ejection activity, and the solar activity is not driven by the core of the sun. The solar activity is all on the surface.
And Professor McCanny also has stated that many times.
Right.
Contrary
all
to
the sun itself, actually, all the solar, if you want to call it the storms, all of the burning, all of the nuclear reactions are on the surface. And when these mass ejection phenomena happen, like the one last year that literally missed Earth, thank God, we would have massive blackouts at the very least, okay, if it hit at Earth. But what we're dealing with is something that is, when that energy pulse hits, and this is the words of Stan Deo, it hits the Earth, that pulse bounces around inside like hitting a large tuning fork or a musical instrument. And if it hits the right harmonic, the energy harmonics, just like hitting like a champion opera singer with the right frequency, it'll make the glass vibrate and shatter. And that shattering, basically, the energy will hit the right frequency for a specific tectonic plate. That plate will hit what's called a piezoelectric slip threshold and slip. Same way as when you hit the Earth with these things, it moves the jet stream. you can cause massive bowing of the jet stream. Now, tell us about that in your research.
Yes. Again, going back to, I gained a lot of my knowledge about this as an amateur, as someone in the science field, a former high school science teacher, but one who listened to Professor James McCanney, formerly of Cornell University, and I got a lot of this understanding that the Earth's as the sun blows out these coronal mass ejections and flares, as Dr. Deagle was talking about, these flares are you can compare them to throwing a pebble into a placid lake and watching the ripples radiate and all around it outwardly. Well, that's exactly what happens with the sun when the sun is excited by an incoming object, sort of like that incoming object is essentially at, I believe, neutral or ground potential. So it provides an electrical short circuit between the plasma, which is built up around the outer ring of our solar system, and
right.
the center electrical field, which is the Earth, the sun itself. Okay, so the sun is like the hub of a bicycle wheel, and the outer buildup of plasma surrounding the ring of the outer solar system is comparable to the bicycle tire.
Right.
Okay. And the plasma discharge occurs because you have a tremendous separation of positive and negative charge, just like creating electrical discharge, and that would be the path of the discharge would be sort of like the path of the spokes. It would be the direction of the spokes on the bicycle wheel, going from the outer wheel to the inner hub, which is the sun, comparable to the sun.
Right.
And these discharges, electrical discharges, are like huge sheets of plasma. And when, if Earth happens to be in the line with that plasma discharge, that spoke of the bicycle wheel,
right.
then Earth gets whacked with it.
Yeah, and we actually came relatively close. That last coronal mass ejection was within 150,000 miles of Earth. The one last,
yeah, that's relatively
last
close.
Pardon me?
Right. That's
yeah,
very
and,
close,
and
yeah.
if people don't believe me, I go out and look, coronal mass ejection, Google it, find out that there was this huge solar storm that occurred last year. Why? I mean, if you start adding all these together, you start saying...
Yeah. I mean, the scientists can verify. If you check with all the solar scientists and all the data they put out, you will see that solar
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.